Sir Alexander Glen, reel 5.
My puzzle run begins with SOE Cairo, I think. What was happening in SOE from 1943 onwards, perhaps? Remember that a number of my old colleagues in Yugoslavia had gone different directions. Some had come back to London, some went to Cairo, etc. And we were discussing Klugman a few moments ago, and Klugman as David Martin's favourite choice as the Soviet agent planted within SOE. I don't disagree that Klugman probably was an SOE agent, but I do think that the issue and the question is far, far deeper and wider than that. I think SOE in themselves may have been aiming at ambition targets, quite detached from politics, if you like. I think SOE Cairo were an independent body out of the control of chiefs of staff in London, and Keyboard, to a less extent Glen Connor. I wouldn't have thought Glen Connor had these ambitions, but Keyboard I would have thought certainly had, of creating perhaps an SOE empire based on Cairo all of his own. And that does explain, if you like, Keyboard's almost unbelievable action in forging the signal saying that McLean was totally unsuitable, purporting that that came in General Wilson's name. I mean, an extraordinary action for a senior army officer who really risking his career in one rather unimportant throw. And I'd like to just open up that view. Was this the corruption of ambition as seen by Keeble and associates at that moment? I think that could be plausible, because I've always felt that where SOE operated well, as in, for example, the Norwegian sections we mentioned earlier, you had a strong Norwegian government, Norwegian military and naval staff that was realistic in every sense, and a king. And so you had a discipline, an external discipline, demanding that operations in Norway were considered from a Norwegian point of view as well as an Allied point of view. Cairo, none of that operated at all. So I think I think it could be plausible to argue that SOE Cairo were free at the wrong moment, developed. Were trying to develop an ethos of their own which could only lead really to disaster, both for themselves, as it did, and also for others. But at the same time, I think other factors come into it, and the factor of, call it penetration by the Soviet, or undue influence by those at that moment left-wing inclined. And that influence, again, I think is perfectly plausible, because we were allied to the Soviet Union, they were our allies. Propaganda was Uncle Joe and the Red Army. Jolly lucky, and we were jolly lucky to have them alongside with us. It would have been a great deal worse if they had been against us. So emotionally, surely it's reasonable to suppose that there was a pro-Soviet bias at that time, which could be quite innocent, but a natural pro-Soviet balance at that time. I think it would be very strange if there hadn't been. At the same time, within Europe, but within this country too, you fight a war, and people are tired, and there's surely quite a legitimate sense, we want something different after it. To hell with the old ways, to hell with the old gang, they've landed us in this. And that, again, I think is entirely innocent. It's natural, it's probably a very good thing too. But I wonder if these three factors, and perhaps other ones too, coincided in this curious SOE development, curious SOE, and later Bari. What the evidence of it, I certainly, my own signals, one or two which were apprehensive of the partisans, and remember these were all addressed to Commander-in-Chief, Naval Commander-in-Chief Mediterranean, but they did go through SOE channels, didn't arrive, and they gone off into thin air. I didn't keep, for security reasons in the country, any signal log of my own deliberately. So I'm relying on memory, remember, to compare text and that sort of thing. But at that time, my memory was very alert. I was only in the country at that time for 4 months, not a very long period, and it was pretty, on a day-to-day diary basis, if you like, it was very consecutive. But certainly my own signals didn't arrive. Some of my own signals, sorry, didn't arrive. Anthony Quayle's experience in Albania tallies exactly with what I've just said. Equally, taking into account people like Archie Jack, our old friend Michael Lees, and several others of evasion, half promises, promise drops. It seems a bit too good to be true, and I feel once again that they've got evidence of SOE procrastination and downright untruths. And when you've got your own officers in the field, I think you look after them. And I don't think SOE did in that way. At the same time, there's one's got to, I think, bring into account the differing versions from those with the Chetniks. I mean, there is that broad range of, it seems to me that those who were nearest to Mihailovic were least unfavourable, to use that phrase, to him, and those who were some of the far-flung bands, perhaps not very well led, were quite bitter. So you get a mixed bag. But all in all, boiling this down together, I hope Mark Wheeler, in his history of SOE, will be able to establish one way or the other, was SOE intelligence fudged? Was it altered? Was it massaged? And to what extent was or not, were there political judgments in, did they match up to the integrity required? My guess today is that they will be found wanting on both these counts. But in a way, humanly, I'm not at all sure that the worst and the least explicable part of the performance was this appalling callousness, if you like, to BLOs in the field who were not on the winning side. I think those of us with the partisans did receive enough red carpet, if you like, when we came out. I think those with the other side received absolutely none. Is that fair? I don't think I can add very much to that.
Can you tell me under what circumstances, can you draw the picture of the circumstances under which you would meet James Quigman and more of the impression he made on you?
Oh, sure. Very easy. Simply waiting, for example, waiting to be dropped into, we haven't come to yet, the Danube, Northwest Serbia. I suppose my waiting period there was about 2 or 3 weeks, perfectly reasonable waiting period. And so I'd come into the office probably, I should think, every day. I spent quite a lot of time with the photographic interpretation units who were photographing Danube at that time. I spent a lot of time with them. But I'd go into SOE headquarters, Bari, almost always would see Klugman, probably John Ennals also. I don't think I ever asked Ennals out in the evening, but Klugman once a week for 3 or 4 weeks, and perhaps more than that. We would dine either in the naval mess at Bari, which was very pleasant, or try and find some little Italian joint, you know, down the side streets. I've already given you my impression of him.
Perhaps you could repeat it.
Yes, of a slightly teddy bear, agreeable companion, certainly when informed, nice, I mean, relaxing companion too. That's very important in him. One didn't feel tense or harassed by him. I was fully aware of his political views, and he made no secret of them either. I've always been rather like Norman in the which insurance company advertisements. Always been rather like Norman, paying quite a lot of attention to my own likely security being dropped in parachute or something else. I never went away with him the feeling that something might be sewed up or wouldn't open. But I was aware, I was fully aware that I wouldn't fix it. If I sent a damning signal on the partisans, this is absolute cocked-up nonsense. They aren't fighting. It's a reverse of what you're being told. I wouldn't have sent that signal to James Klugman. That would have, quite clearly.
Did James Klugman talk not only about his political opinions, but his actual membership of the Communist Party?
He certainly told me he was a member. More than once.
What about John Ennals? What was he like?
John left all the, a totally different sort of body reaction. I wasn't ever at ease with him. Ever. I was prickled, on the defensive, uneasy. Basically, I mean, I just did not trust him at all. Klugman, despite everything I've said, I felt that, extended parachute, for example, that measure of personal confidence in Klugman.
Was Enels a censorious type of person?
Enels?
Yes.
No, he's blooming self-righteous, for example. Tremendously self-righteous. And there was only one truth. But he was conceding that truth. He was playing, I mentioned earlier, SOE Ambitions as an organization. He was playing his cards very, very carefully. I don't think James Klugman at that time was bothering, James Klugman wasn't bothering to conceal his colors. He was in his own colors. It's the difference between them.
And Basil Davidson?
Well, remember, I'd known Basil from Belgrade. And this is a very Scottish remark I'm going to make. I felt Basil was a slick Englishman. I felt he was too smooth. Again, at that time, Russia wasn't in the war, remember that. I mistrusted Basil, yes, but a part of the mistrust is the unease of a Scot with a smoothie Englishman. Is that comprehensible?
Yes.
Yeah. And in analyzing, guessing, the SOE cocktail, I could imagine a situation where when Deakin came to Cairo, and I wouldn't have thought Deakin had any political affiliation when he came to Cairo, I could understand if Deakin was more brainwashed by Basil than has been thought, or brainwashed maybe is too strong, more influenced is a better word, I think. I don't mean brainwashed, no, influenced, deeply influenced. And another person, of course, then must come into is Hugh Seton Watson, who probably had a greater opportunity to influence opinion than Klugman, was certainly, I think, more than left inclined at that time than alliance with the Soviet Union would suggest, and who had, through his father, academically through himself, I think had a academic conviction that I know carried very considerable weight. Adding on to the cocktail, aren't we? And therefore, I think this is a very involved situation. Coming back to SOE in Cairo, if you like, on their own, away from London control, not under the control of GOC Middle East, a bit of empire building, a few Thatcherite entrepreneurs taking every opportunity of that empire building for their own purposes.
It's interesting that you say that you estimate that James Klugman would have had not so much influence because at the same time he was a very capable man and very, presumably very persuasive man.
Well, I'm measuring that when I say I'm measuring the not... I'm measuring that against the almost sole influence, as suggested by David Martin. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that Tuchman had minimal small influence. I think he'd considerable influence. But I'm saying also that there were other people who, in different ways, played consciously or accidentally into the same overall effect. And then again, I think you've got to relate in the long-term antipathy between SIS and SOE. A much weaker SIS in Cairo than the fame, pretty formidable, under Stuart Mingus, or with Mingus himself, pretty formidable body still, despite the limitations in it in London, but a very formidable advocate of SIS. And if I relate in the other service chiefs of John Godfrey during his time as DNI, certainly powerful. I was lucky to work for Godfrey, and now, as absolutely distinct from what I've said about SOE's attitude to those working for them, John Godfrey was a most marvelous man to work for. You knew he would defend you through thick and thin. And if he didn't, he thought you'd done, I had two encounters with John when I really had made the balls up of things. You were called in, and you were bloody well told that, right to your face, no ambiguity. And then he would say, "Come on, we have a drink afterwards." He was marvellously straight with his people, which I think accounts for the fact that after his dismissal and the sad time in India, that those who worked NID, and we had this dining club, the 36 Club, represented really everyone, Roger Wynn, all the U-boat plot, literally. And that continued. We used to dine once a month, and these dinners were attended by everyone for the next 20 years. John Godfrey had leadership. He had real leadership, and he looked after his pack. That didn't happen in SOE.
You were making the point to me earlier, off the record, maybe you'd like to repeat it now, about this speculation, which we've heard quite a bit about, Soviet moles in SOE headquarters, yeah. And I think you said to me earlier that you didn't think that that was an important issue with regard to the question of the influence that was thrown behind the partisans rather than the Chetniks.
Could you repeat that? Because I'm not sure. What did I say? I may have...
You said that you didn't really think that was the key issue as to whether there were Soviet moles there, Soviet agents in SOE headquarters with regard to the throwing of the British weight behind the partisans rather than the Chetniks.
Oh, I think I gave a bad impression on that. I think that's a case of choosing words badly. I chose words badly. With the planning papers which SOE prepared, the briefs to Churchill, the reports such as they were from officers in the field, and assuming that SOE had no access, which I think is correct, to higher grade ultra, they may have had access to the lower grade police decrypts, for example. But assuming they didn't, I would have thought that a directly Soviet-inspired mole, or moles, I think it was one, there were more, was important. Sorry, I must have given wrong impression, but I think it would have. I think that for the reasons we've just said now, that the effect would have been the same. And one thing I didn't add when mentioning SOE's sense of their own autonomy, their own freedom, if you like, their ambitions, I think Keble at that moment was determined that he had discovered the partisans. This was going to be his great trump card, shared with no one else. And when Maclean was suddenly put up by the Prime Minister, I might guess that the explanation why Keble went to all these lengths, as we've already said, to prevent Maclean going, was that he assessed that Maclean's time in Moscow, his knowledge of the Communist Party, and particularly not only in Moscow, but also of the French Communists when he was in Paris, would make him Maclean, very suspicious of Keble's new discovery, the partisan movement, and that Keble was determined to keep out this right-wing Tory, if you like, from mucking up Keble's baby. Now, that's all conjecture. This is pure conjecture.
Right. Now, if we can get back to your own personal story.
Is that helpful?
Yes.
Right.
If we can get back to your personal story and the narrative, because I think we now go on to the work that you did after Albania.
Yeah. Can I...